This talk was given at Insight Meditation South Bay. For more information and a schedule of our events, visit the Insight Meditation South Bay website at www.imsb.org. For information about online programs, visit the Bodhi Courses website at www.bodhicourses.org. Bodhi is spelled B-O-D-H-I.
This is great. And this is a super subject. Vipassana has, Theravadan tradition has many, many lists. Zen doesn't do so many lists. To have a chance to talk about my favorite list is a real treat. This is a list that everybody knows about because this is the essence of Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching. This is what he came from the tree to tell us, to his discovery, how simple things are. Really, basically, how simple life is. And so that it's based on the Four Noble Truths. It's the fourth noble truth, this list. The first noble truth is that there's a lot of dissatisfaction in life, that it's full of sharp edges and disappointments and misery of all kinds. Not mostly the broken leg kind, but the kind that we do to ourselves by expecting more of ourselves or less of ourselves than we actually are. It's based on how we make up stories about ourselves rather than facing the reality of our situation. That's what is called sometimes our suffering. He said the suffering is based on the assumption that there is a fixed self person here that is just like this. And the suffering comes when we keep bumping against the edges because it's not like that. It's much bigger than that. And it's lumpier and it changes all the time. It's never the same. And so assuming that there is a self is where the suffering is coming from, assuming that there's this fixed place that we come from and that everything around us is fixed also and everything has a name and it's never going to change. And at the same time, it's all falling apart. It's all changing continually. And it's all made up. We call this a table, but if it got really, really cold and we came down to it, this could be called firewood. If we took it apart and a big dog came along, it could be a dog toy. It could be a weapon. It could be a pile of junk. It could be detritus in the woods. It will be detritus in the woods. We will all be detritus in the woods. That's Buddha's, not teaching, but just reminder. Hey, folks, the way it is not the way we think it is or often want it to be. And our suffering comes because we keep bumping up against the reality of life, which is that it changes and that we're not the same person all the time. We do something and say, oh, that's not like me. I wouldn't have said something like that, but I did. Huh? Where do our thoughts come from? Where does our self come from? We popped out of our mom and took air. We don't know, really. We're just finding out every moment, moment by moment by moment. Oh, this is it. Oh, now this is it. Oh, really? Is this it too? Sometimes it isn't the greatest. Sometimes it's super. We just don't know from moment to moment. And allowing and agreeing to the reality of things is what the third noble truth is. It's called nirvana. It's considered to be a kind of heavenly space in the mind where we're silent and still and one-pointed and completely agreeable to whatever is going on, 100%. The fourth noble truth is how to do this. It's how to live, which is why I like it so much, because it's not fancy. It's not esoteric. It doesn't say, in order to have a spiritual, holy life, you have to do these spiritual and holy things. It says, number one, to understand, deeply understand what I just said, that life is ephemeral and the self is ephemeral and that all things are changing continually and that we can have a mind of true integrity and authenticity, to simply be who we are and be glad of it and proud of it and live like that, not trying to live up to some standard or feel ashamed about a lower standard that we imagine that we are. We don't know who we are, but we can be completely proud and straightforward about what this is moment by moment. Speak the truth, which is the next one, right speech. Just talk like it is. It means kind speech. It means generous speech. It means speech that is able to connect with others. And then the next one is right action. Because every moment we're asking, now what do I do? Now what can we do? These days, everybody is going around in circles asking that in the large sense of the world. What can we do? It's huge. And in our small, little, each individual life, we're always thinking this too. Always searching for what to do next. And so right action is the guidance for that. And it's also a list. It's a list of the precepts, which sound a little bit like thou shalt not. The first one is no killing. In Zen, we have 10 of them, 10 precepts. In Theravadan tradition, they're just the first five. No killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, and no clouding the mind with anything. Very simple. Really, very simple. It's not asking very much of us, really. Just how to be living a life of real integrity. How to help ourselves and help others. So no killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, and no clouding the mind are all things that we're not only able to do, but we're able to convey and converge with others. It makes it possible to live a life with others. Because without others, we don't live. Actually, little babies die if they're not touched. And we as human beings need each other because we are part and parcel of each other. We feel it when we get together. We just felt it as I watched it as you all stirred around and touched each other. It's really important. So the next one is right livelihood. So get a job that doesn't hurt anybody. And they make a list out of that. Don't be a butcher. Don't be a guy who's a military guy. Don't be a hunter. Don't do bloody deeds, basically. Even though there are many Zen stories about a famous master living with the hunters, or Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, taking the form of a butcher because that was necessary to express compassion in some drama. So it's all about how we live in the moment and how we bring our integrity into the moment itself with a wide and generous mind. And with right effort, to use an enormous amount. Life takes a lot of effort. And doing it right doesn't mean being good. It doesn't mean following the rules. It just means following what's deepest and wisest in each one of us. Your own deep wisdom. Your own best self. With all that you have. And then that is going right into right concentration. And right concentration and right mindfulness go together. Concentration is meditation itself, and mindfulness is being present wherever we are, whenever we are, which is a form of meditation also. So as a friend of mine used to do, she would sit at a stoplight in her car. She used to sit there wanting to go. And then she learned from Thich Nhat Hanh that you could use that stoplight to practice in the world, practice mindfulness. You just sit there and breathe until it turns green. And she said after a while she got very upset when it turned green. She was having such a good time. So those are the eight, right? View, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, concentration, and mindfulness. So right action is being able to figure out what's right and what's wrong. And of course, we're really good at that. Our minds are just made in this split way of figuring out what's right and what's wrong. We like this and we don't like that. This person's a good person and this one's not. There's something wrong with this and something good about this. If we begin to notice it, it becomes kind of silly. We begin to see that maybe things aren't quite so black and white. In fact, they aren't black and white at all. There is no such thing. It's a mush. And every time we think we've got it all nailed down and understood, whew, it changes into something else. So having a broad mind that can allow things to change in the way that they do change allows us to feel free and easy in our life and allows us to love ourselves and love others. Otherwise, we're all tightened up and protecting ourselves, protecting this little fixed self. And it's a miserable existence. So the precepts are about virtuous conduct, they say. But it's really not about being good. It's more about how to have a harmonious life, how to live well. And we all want to live well. We all do live well, actually, in this world. We are so fortunate. In Zen, we have the three pure precepts that we take before we take the 10 precepts. And they are what I call the spiritual essence of the precepts and also the spiritual essence of the Eightfold Path. And the way my teacher, Kobun Chino, casts them or translates them is embracing and sustaining right conduct. Embracing and sustaining every good. Embracing and sustaining all beings. And then from there we go to no killing, no stealing, no lying. So our experience of our life is based on our body life. And we know, especially after we have learned meditation and have found some clarity, some ability to see through the garbage that is flowing through our minds so often, to see how often trivial it is, and to appreciate the depth of our mind as well and the deep wisdom that exists there. And having done that, to be aware of our moral sense, of our own sense of what is right and what is wrong, even though other people may tell us something else. Buddha himself said, don't believe anything that anybody tells you, even me, even what I say. Let it resonate in you, in your experience. You're the one who knows. Allow yourself to be the one who knows. That's so important. So the goal, we say in Zen, there's no goal. No goal. No achievement, no attainment, no nothing. The goal is to forget the self. And Buddha said, as he was dying, be your own light. Trust yourself. He said, I didn't come to be a teacher. I came to show you who you are. That you yourself are the teacher. Be your own light. So that's what I brought. There's time for questions.
You said the goal is to forget yourself. Can you just elaborate on that?
It takes actually sitting down and looking at what we think of as ourself. It takes a study of it. We think we know. You know, we are given a name. We're given a place to live. We're given a world. In fact, we are a world, and we are given a language to connect with it and name it. Otherwise, without names, everything belongs in one place, in one piece. We separate it out in our brains by saying, this is a bell. But the bell is connected to the cushion, and the cushion's connected to the table, and the table's connected to the floor, to the ground, to the center of the earth, to the other side of the earth, to the universe. It's all of a piece. But as we study how things are, we see that we pick it out. But we could pick out more details from the bell. We could pick out a lot more details from ourselves. We have our fingernails and our fingers and our ears and etc. But all of that is saying me. But me is much bigger than that. And so the more you study it, the more you can't really put your finger on it. You have a sense of it, and a sense of kind of dignity. But the dignity isn't personal. The more personal we get, the more complicated our mind gets. And dignity helps us not get so mixed up.
Couple of parts of your talk, two different things that you said, I had a similar reaction to them. Towards the end, when you mentioned that Buddha says we are our own light, we can, something along those lines, yeah, being our own light. And earlier when you mentioned we know the right thing to do, our mind knows what the right thing to do is. Okay. With both of those, my reaction was, I think we are being given too much credit that we may not deserve. I'm not sure we all have the light, and I'm not sure we all always know what the right thing to do is. So
that's why we practice. That's what practice is based on, is allowing ourselves to discover what the right thing is. That's what this list, so-called, is about. That if we have a practice of meditation and mindfulness and a view of life as it really is, that gives us clarity, not usually right away, often not right away. Often we have to sit for a long time to try to know what the right way is. In our culture, we're always trying to get things done right away. And we're trying to know the right way right away. And it can't be done. Life doesn't move like that. If you live in the forest doesn't move like that. And natural human life doesn't either. Sometimes we have to wait a long time to know what the right thing is. And sometimes the right thing is waiting for us right around the corner.
And sometimes the mind is very good at tricking us into pretending to know what the right thing is when it isn't. It's very good at playing games and tricks.
Exactly, which is why it's really important to know ourselves really well.
Right.
Know our tricks. Say, oh, I see you. Thank you very much. You're tricking me again. Darn.
And would you say the same thing about being our own light? What you said about
yes.
how the Buddha said we are our own light?
Yes, one of our famous teachers says, sometimes we're Buddha, sometimes we're ordinary beings. Sometimes we're glowing with light, sometimes we're splashed with mud and soaked with water. It's just the way we are.
And hopefully when we are splashed with mud, we know that we are splashed with mud, I hope.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the point. To know ourselves and to be honest about it. To be truthful. Oh, I made a mistake. One more stupid mistake. It's one mistake after another, really. But we're all trying.
Thank you. I wanted to give other people a chance if they had a question. One last question, which is, so the five precepts are easier to remember, maybe because they're shorter and they're, as you said, very simple and basic. Mm. The eight, on the other hand, even though I've heard them several times over the years, I still have a hard time remembering them all. I can remember some of them randomly, but I'm not sure I could count all eight. Is there a trick or a secret to how to remember all eight?
Well, there probably is, but I don't know what it is. I have the same trouble with it. I forget. The first two, right insight, or right view and right effort. No, right. See, I've forgotten already.
Yes. And I remember the intention, action, and the speech. I remember
yes.
those three.
right.
Thank you.
Oh, good.
I have a little acronym I made up for it, so I could remember all of them, too. There's so many. I call it VC, for whatever reasons I can remember VC to start with.
View.
And
concentration.
And then Salem, a famous location in the United States and Massachusetts.
Oh.
Right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right meditation. And the last one is C, right concentration. So VI, view and intent.
Intent.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's view and intent. It's VI and then Salem, C.
I see.
If that helps, great. If not, you'll have to think of another.
The first two, view and intention, are both wisdom. They are both our wisdom side. And then action, livelihood, and effort are how they're the ethical side. Mm-hmm. They're actually how to live. Get a good job and be honest, basically. And then the last are meditation practice. Mm-hmm. So the two at the top are the wisdom side, so that's the intention and the
view.
Insight, the view. So, and then the speech and the action and the livelihood and in concentration and meditation. So it all fits, but it is hard to remember. It's hard for me to remember.
I can add another suggestion. IMSB.org, the website, at the top of the, on the homepage, at the top header links, there is one link that says teachings. It's a pull-down link. It has the Buddhist lists, many of them there, and you can print them out. And I printed out the Noble Eightfold Path, and I went over it and over it time and again and looked at it and approached it from different angles, first from the wisdom and then ethical. And so I found it very helpful to have a printout of what they were, and then I could refer to it from time to time. So that's another way. Angie, you've spoken quite a bit about practice and the teachings. Would you say just a little bit more about how they support one another? How it's important to have practice, and also, at least I find it very valuable and important to receive the teachings as well. So the relationship between those two.
Without a meditation practice, I think it's very hard to maintain even the even a little bit of clarity of mind. I think our minds are so overwhelmed with information and stimulation and overexcitement, you could say, overwhelm, for many different reasons, for cultural reasons and for political reasons, and there are just a lot of reasons to keep us stirred up. And I think if we don't have some way of very often sitting down and doing nothing, stopping, and just reconnecting to what this is, then we're never going to be living an honest life. We won't be real. We'll be spinning and being spun by the whole culture, by everything that's going on. And because of that, it's not only that our own life gets messed up, you could say, but that we mess up our world. It's very hard to, if we're not clear, to connect with others. And without that connection, as I say, our life is not worth living, really. It's very, very important to have connection. Doesn't have to be many, many, but just true, honest, real touch with others. So, so important.
Thank you. Is it appropriate, if it's appropriate, would you mention what the other five precepts are in Zen?
No, let's see. John will help me. No sexual misconduct, no clouding the mind, no dwelling on past mistakes, no blaming self, no blaming others.
Respecting parents and ancestors.
No, that's not in it. How do you say it? Withholding the teaching, no being angry, and no abusing Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. That's the best one. Yeah.
Anybody else, please?
How about like any other differences, or how do you compare Zen and the Buddhist teachings? Like, how similar are they?
The Vipassana is based, the Theravadan tradition is based on what is considered to be Buddha's original teaching. And Zen is too. But Zen, there's another form of Buddhism that grew up after, long after Buddha's time, that elaborated on it, on the practice. And so our forms are a little bit different, but the basic understanding is the same. There are just a lot more words in Vipassana practice. Zen is more quiet.
More rituals.
Oh, yes. Well, then the American Vipassana, for sure. I think if you go to Thailand, you'll see an awful lot of ritual too. But in America, there's hardly any.
Even here in the San Francisco Bay Area, I've been to both. I've been to a number of Zen centers and I've been to Vipassana.
Uh-huh.
The look and feel is very different.
Yes.
Very different.
Yes. Yes.
Very formal, very ritualistic. The other one
right.
is very casual, very informal, and non-ritualistic.
Well, our practice is in the middle of that, because our teacher, though he was very highly trained and came from an ancient temple where his father was a teacher and his father was too, in Japan, really loved America. And thought that the Japanese way was much too rigid. So he took a lot of the ritual out of it. And so we're kind of kickback Zen, you could say. not completely. No, our teacher was brought from to America by Suzuki Roshi to help set up Tassajara. So... And then after that, Suzuki Roshi, when he was dying, asked Koban to stay and take over his Los Altos Zendo. So, and that's where I met him.
Suzuki Roshi? Was that your teacher, Suzuki Roshi?
No, I first got to Tassajara and saw him and thought, this is what I was looking for the whole time. And then I was told there that there was a teacher in Los Altos where I lived, and that was my teacher.
Who was that?
Koban Chino. Koban? K-O-B-U-N. Yeah. Chino Otogawa was his last name. But we all called him Koban. And he always said, I just want to be your friend.
So he was less strict than, let's say, Suzuki Roshi's Japanese way of Zen.
Yes, yes.
I didn't know that, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll offer another question. This is, I'm sure, on everyone's mind these days, but... And you have spoken quite a bit about how to be with others, whether they are doing things that we approve of or not. But what is your suggestion on how to hold what's happening in the world, in Paris and other places? It's on everybody's mind.
I think the best thing is to review Thich Nhat Hanh's poem. I think we should all have it on our, by our telephone or something, or carry it around in our cell.
Call me by my true name.
Call me by our true names.
Yeah.
That I am the frog, and I am the bug that the frog is eating. And I am I've forgotten all the different things that I am, that is just the nature of the way world is, and I am the girl who is raped and throws her into the ocean, herself into the ocean. I am the man who raped her, and I am all these together. We can't separate ourselves from it. We are all of a part. And we can send tremendous amount of in us of all the loving kindness that we have in the direction where it needs to go. It's the most healing thing. And we can cry when it's sad and rejoice when it's happy. And we ourselves are empowered to do the best we can in our world. We can't go there, wherever there is. I mean, there are so many theres and so much need. It can be overwhelming. And we have no power in that way. But we have all the power in the world right here, right now, in our own breast. And this is where the loving kindness comes from.
Thank you. I was just thinking about, I don't know much about Zen or Buddhism, I mean, other than just some of the practices, but I don't know much about the teaching. And recently I've been thinking about meaning. So in that under that topic, like, do Zen or the practice that you have, do you think that you know, we create our own meaning with life, or there's meaning, you know, that's just kind of out there, or like luck and chance for things that happen in our life as far as direction and path, or you know, a calling? Or do you think we you know, I don't want to say too much more, but do you think we create that ourselves and what we manifest, or what we, you know, what we think about ourselves in our, you know, kind of like our own light in our own way?
Well, when back in the 60s, people talked about my karma and your karma and tried to make it look like there was a long, straight arrow pointing right to here, and that was my way or your way. And that isn't what Buddha meant by karma. He meant actually action, that all the infinite myriad actions that come into each moment create each moment. So if you think of it in terms of vectors, you know, the little arrows that are either long or short or medium-sized, depending on the energy that's in them, the infinite number of vectors all going into making up you and me and this situation. And each one of us is a situation. But we can't know. There are too many to even begin to figure out what all that is that's affecting us. We are a flow that we just go along with and take up as much with our mind, with our intellect, and our warmth and kindness to deal with it as best we can. And be honest about not knowing, because a lot of times we just don't know. And I think it's actually refreshing not to know a lot of times, and allow it to open up as it will and teach us what it is. It makes life a big adventure. It's kind of boring if you know, anyway. And we don't. We really don't.